Hello and welcome. My name is Kyle, and this is How You Level Up, a podcast that decodes language to help you become your best self.
The Technological Republic, Hard Power, Soft Belief, and the Future of the West by Alex Karp and Nicholas Zemiska. Alex Karp is the CEO of Palantir, and Zemiska, I believe, is his like right-hand guy, like chief of staff. And I didn't really know what to expect with this book. I just knew that I really liked Alex Karp and his mindset and his philosophies. I've saw a number of interviews with him, and he's just like such an interesting guy, really thinks outside the box, really philosophical, very contrarian, like a lot of kind of has a lot of Peter Thiel type qualities. I think him and Peter Thiel are very close and started Palantir together. And so when I saw he wrote a book, I was pretty interested in like what he had to say. And even though I didn't really know what he was going to be talking about, and I'm sure you guys could agree that this book was like, it felt to me like a collection of essays almost. It had several like themes to it, but it didn't have one like overall message. I think it just had a lot of like different ideas and opinions on the technology industry at large, and also like just culture in the U.S. at large, and kind of, you know, how certain things have been declining in terms of culture. That's like, I guess, like a high level setup. I mean, it's been hard to kind of describe this book to people like that have asked me what I'm reading. Like it's sort of hard to put it into words. It's just kind of it's just Alex Karp's beliefs and philosophies around technology and the United States and the West in general. I'm curious what you guys thought. I think Kyle, it seemed like you really liked it and you read it quickly. Do you want to talk about what you liked?
Yeah, I think when I described this book to people who were like, oh, you've got your book club, like, what'd you guys read? It's hard to wrap your head around all of it in like an elevator pitch, but what I have been describing it is that the book, it makes a case for tech working with government. And in recent decades, there's been contracts that large tech organizations have with government. And then the employees of those companies will then sign petitions and are upset. Like, no, we shouldn't work with the US government. And so the case that is made is like, okay, well, that's why we don't have flying cars, is because tech companies don't work with governments. And instead, they built Instagram. So if you're going to have all of your great minds of the generation working on Instagram or Facebook or Meta, then that's what you're going to get. You're going to get consumables rather than further progressing us towards what I would like to see as like a sci-fi world.
I think that sums it up.
Yeah, just I think I want to make one distinction. So I think you're right to an extent around he advocates tech working for government in a few chapters of the book. But I think the deeper point that he makes is not necessarily, you don't need necessarily to work with government and provide a product that like has government contracts. It's more so, can you, like, I think the framing he wants to put into the minds of technologists and entrepreneurs is like, can you work on something that at the very least advances our country, right? And advances our national interest? It doesn't, you don't need to go into partnership with the government, but is what you're building, consequential? And yeah, like you said, it kind of builds up to like a sci-fi world, and or even just like solves, you know, a lot of medical and healthcare problems or education. And yeah, I think the tech industry has gotten, especially like in the 2010s, way too deep into consumerism and social media and delivery apps. And yeah, he makes a really compelling case about just thinking about, like, just advocating for really thinking about what to work on, and does what you're working on advance our national interests as a society? Like, does it make our country, like, a better place to live? Does it, you know, does it, like, make us safer or healthier? Things like that. So, Doug, I'll let you chime in now.
Yeah, I thought that the opening chapters where he sort of gives kind of this scathing, I felt it was like a scathing critique of people who have essentially benefited from a system that they don't contribute back to, and that they're sort of just draining the resources and living in a system that was created by people who sort of made sacrifices, I guess, for the greater or wider society. And then complaining about the system that you live in and critiquing it and refusing to partake in building it up. I thought that was in, like, towards the beginning of the book, I really was following his line of thought, and I felt like it was very personal to him because he's in that world, and it seemed like it was coming from a place of frustration as well, of trying to build a project. I'm sure he's trying to hire people and they're off because they're getting better packages from companies that are, you know, selling data and consumerism. And he's like, I'm trying to build a project that will strengthen the U.S. government, and while competing with our geopolitical rivals, or, you know. So I thought that was a very I was kind of taken aback reading that, because I had sort of a more negative idea of him. I haven't watched interviews with him like you recommended, but I had sort of a negative perception of him, just because I think that Palantir has a lot of potential dangers, which he does speak about, you know, that you can't be afraid of those dangers, and, like, you can't be such a purist, and you have to go into the kind of the unknown. So I understood his point there, but yeah, overall I felt like that was my favorite part of the book, his critique of just people sort of draining from the society without contributing back to it, and then having like a moral air of moral superiority mm-hmm. about the society that their ancestors built, you know, with their blood, basically. Like, yeah. I thought that was great. I really like that.
If I can. So I think the argument of, like, tech working with government is, he made a really strong case, and I completely agree with it. There's nuance, though, to it, in the sense of, like, so, you know, he mentioned in the book how, like, the atomic bomb was, like, a gadget that was made, and it didn't become bad until it became bad, right? Like, the atomic bomb was a great thing that was needed, and then all of a sudden now there's multiple countries with atomic bombs. And so the idea of tech companies working with the government and, like, having it lead to world peace, that was a point that was, like, it's like a secondary point within that, the reasoning. But I didn't entirely agree with that part, because we don't have world peace. I don't think there's been a single day where there's not been war across the world, but it's gone from macro to micro. And that change doesn't mean that the tech companies working with the government is bad, but it does mean more needs to be done. And so, you know, the example of, like, the Oppenheimer project, like, working through all of that, where you have these great minds who are not normally in the government now stepping in and helping the government to figure out hard problems. Again, like, don't, Doug, like you just said, don't critique the society in which you live unless you're going to attempt to work with them to figure out where they should be. Because telling the government, you're just doing wrong, like, change, it's never mm-hmm. going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there was a, in the tech world, there was a period of at least 4 or 5 years, probably, like, maybe during the Trump years, and there's probably some reason for that, but, like, the technology industry really shied away from doing anything in government or military, especially military purposes, right? And you had all these cases of like Google employees signing a letter to make sure that Google isn't involved in any military contracts, and same with Microsoft and Amazon as well, I think. So, and that's totally shifted now, thanks in large part to Palantir. Like, Palantir is probably one of a few companies who have actually like made a very persuasive argument, and this is talked a lot about in the book, that actually like by building software for or hardware for that matter for the military, your yes, the work that you're doing can, you know, can harm lives, but you're supporting the U.S. As a country and its allies, right? And so the work that these tech companies will do are doing, like Palantir, are to make America like soldiers in a better, put them in a better position, make them safer, or give them information. And like you saw that with Ukraine, right? Like we provided a lot of military hardware and software and drones and everything to Ukraine, which is our ally, and you know, we've helped them. And so, you know, you've seen this like total shift, I think, in the last couple of years, I would say maybe 2-3 years of like it being clearly a good decision, to a smart decision to help America when it comes to military efforts and, you know, protecting our soldiers. And it's like, yeah, like those people who signed the letter at Google had the complete, like, just, I guess I kind of get where they were coming from, but like at the end of the day, they had this like moral superiority, right? Like you just said, Doug, around like, you know, doing anything for the military, but it's like by not doing anything for the military, you put our people at bigger risk, right? Which is the opposite of moral. Like, so it's been an interesting shift that is talked a lot about in this book, I would say.
I thought it was really funny when he points out that the internet was created by the military, and you know, so essentially these people have built a tremendous level of wealth from a military creation, you know, and on systems that were built up essentially by the military to begin with. And I think though I started to disagree with him a little bit philosophically. I feel like I think he's very focused on building his company, and I understand his position, but I started, a lot of the problems that are within American society, they haven't been solved by an iota. Like philosophically, that politicians are corrupt. Unless you change lobbying, people are going to be bought off. He talks about that a little bit, but I feel like if you give a system that's already operating that way total surveillance over its citizens, you're just trapping them. You know what I'm saying? If you can create like maybe Palantir's goal, or I don't know what his actual goal is, but is to build an AI system that's helping make decisions in a society, or almost like a pre-crime sort of thing, you know, or a predictive behavioral, because everything was about behavior too. I noticed that, like, everything was about behavioral studies with animals, and there were a lot of chapters on that.
Experiment again.
I know that's a classic. Every time I hear it, it's so funny. It's my favorite. It's just, I don't know the amount of times I've read about the Milgram experiment. Kyle, reading self-help books, how many times have you read about
every book touches on it at least once?
Yeah. At this point, I'm like, I don't even know if it's real. it's been, I don't know. It's just.
Well, we can't test it again because it's unethical, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I did feel that, like, hey, yes, I understand. Like the philosophical leanings and the standpoint and the time of great minds joining the government to help build these technologies, it was very different than today. I feel like I understood his arguments, but I feel like they were very specific to the time. People thought about things a lot not completely differently, but I felt that the, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but the moral landscape has changed a lot since that time. And I feel like if you unleash these technologies and, you know, carrying the baggage of their creators' ideologies, you're like, you might actually just be trapping Americans into a god-awful system.
Well,
what are you guys
saying? Yeah, I think there's two different points that you're making there. One of which is, you know, when tech works with government to build things, like, it can be good, it can be bad. And then the other point was that we don't want to give government this overarching control over us, the citizens, because they shouldn't have it to begin with. And I think we can separate them in terms of, like, okay, tech working with the government can be a good thing. And we hope that it leads to good things. We don't like it when there's bad things. But if we don't have people who are willing to work with the government, we're never going to get those good things to begin with. Hmm. So we're just giving up all of the possible opportunities to progress our culture. And instead, we're choosing to look at individuality and to focus on, you know, the filter on my fucking app. Right. Whereas I would love to be able to have a piece of technology that I can put on my baby that allows me to see everything they're doing or feeling. And we've got a form of that. But maybe we could be like a decade ahead if people who built really cool things that we use as apps built that shit instead to measure, I don't know, a soldier at war. I want to know everything that's happening to him. And then we take that tech when it's really, really good, and we make it small. Then I can put it on my baby, right? So that's one point, right? And then the other point is, I don't want the government to have more control. I don't want them to have the ability to surveil me at large. I do want the government to be able to take an AI and battle another country's AI who wants to surveil us, though. Right. Because if there's going to be another country who has this fantastic technology and they apply it against us, I want my government to protect me. I don't care what they do at that point when it comes to protecting me. But I do care if any of my individual rights in that protection mm-hmm. get destroyed. So as long as I as an individual can continue to have my rights upheld, great. I mean, if you were to ask me and I was to be the only vote for, like, what should the government do next? Don't take away individual rights. Like, allow for individual sovereignty and then protect everything else, right? Don't let another country come in here and invade us. Don't let there be war, you know, on our shores, which I think was a point in terms of, like, the pacifism of tech workers now. They've never known war, true war. Mm-hmm. We haven't experienced it in generations over here. Mm-hmm. It's always on other shores.
Yep. I would say, yeah, I mean, we can all agree we want to have the best technology, AI, and you know, military hardware against our opponents, right? Like, against our adversaries. Now, I would just challenge you guys, like, Palantir builds a lot of software that police departments use and, like, the CIA uses and FBI uses to find terrorists, right? And find, like he gave an example, the New Orleans Police Department is using Palantir software to find gangs, right? And crack down on gang violence. And some of that is probably surveillance. It's, you know, against the law to surveil, like, law-abiding citizens. And so I don't believe Palantir is breaking the law. And so I kind of am happy that a company like Palantir exists to support police departments, right, who are very technologically inept and with especially with software, and they can come in and provide information and data to try and catch criminals. That's the whole point of Palantir, and they've been completely, like, misunderstood by the public and the media, because there is that veil of like, oh, they're just surveilling everyone and they're like this evil company selling to like, you know, Israel and whatever. But the truth is that they're actually, you know, doing a lot of good when it comes to finding terrorists, cracking down on criminals. And so I have no problem with any of the work they're doing, as long as it's law abiding, which I get it could get to an extent where it's not, like all the Edward Snowden stuff, right, crossed the line of like, that was now we know that was illegal. Right. And I wouldn't want Palantir to do any of that stuff, but they're a company that's bound by law. So that like, I don't imagine they would do anything.
That's what Doug's bringing up though, right? So Edward Snowden comes forward, says the government is spying on its citizens. Who went to jail for that? Like what? Who got in trouble for that? What politicians are still in office that were in office then? And why didn't they pass laws immediately to do something about that? Like there is this lobby aspect of, I sure hope and think Palantir is doing a lot of good and I want, you know, them to help local governments and federal government to like do good things, but like where's the check? If our representatives aren't going to be who we want them, who we need them to be, then is it that we the citizens focus our attention on the tech companies, or is it that we get new people in office who are actually going to be that check?
Yeah, Sky, I guess that is sort of, actually you're helping me clarify my point a little bit, is okay. And I noticed this when he was writing about how Palantir was utilized in Afghanistan to save the government. Like they were spending, I think it was like, I want to say it was $25 billion or something, trying to stop, what is it? What are they called, Kyle? The IEDs or the IEDs? Yeah. Like they were spending a while, which is just crazy that they were spending that much money in order to stop basically like side of the road bombs on the side of the road and stuff. But we ended up in Afghanistan due to policy failure, due to corrupt politicians. And for the Louisiana Police Department, it's like, okay, the policies of the people that are put in place fail the city. And then they're like, don't worry though. We have a software that's going to surveil, which I don't actually know how their data like acquisition fully works, but I imagine they have to comb through data. Mm-hmm. In order to find people who are doing something wrong. So that means they're combing through most likely innocent people's data, but it's tied up. Nobody's ever going to use it for wrongdoing so these are policy failures, which are failure of like the school system teaching people, like they don't have critical thinking anymore. Just like mass policy failures. And then, hey, on the other end of that, don't worry though, we have this surveillance system that's going to clean it all up. It's, yeah. I understand why people are, I also inside of that, I don't know if he chose the title Technological Republic because we're a republic, or he chose it because of Plato's Republic, which he did mention Plato. And in Plato's Republic, which is, I think, important because there is this sort of philosophical undercurrent with like Peter Thiel and these guys, which I've only read like leftist books on technocracies and technocratic feudalism, but that is sort of what the Republic is about. It's about dividing society based on. I think Plato says you divide society by gold, souls, silver, and bronze. And like the philosopher kings, which I don't know if he chose the title because of this, will essentially be like the technological elite who decide where everybody falls within a society. You know, I don't know if he chose it because of that, but a lot of his behavioral chapters didn't give me much hope that he didn't choose it because of that. Like he's saying, no, we need to have a technological elite, philosopher kings implanted within the government deciding what happens for everybody. I mean, I might be reading too much into it, but I do think that there is sort of like a faction in our country that is looking to attain sort of like a technologically feudalistic society where we're all sort of peons that have to obey the rules and be surveilled under, you know, under the guise of, hey, China's doing it. If we don't do it, then they're going to win, even though we built China, we helped build China. You know, it's always like a, this, hey, they're in Afghanistan and Iraq. If we don't go over there, we're fucked. And then you're like, we're fucked either way. So I feel like a lot of the underlying causes aren't being solved or addressed. And we're just essentially giving tools to like credence to mass surveil us. But that's just me.
Yeah. I think the whole idea of like not wanting to help the government because it leads to war or it leads to abuse is the, you know, the idea of the pacifist that was talked about in the book of like pacifism is good, but it's not good during times of war. And we're kind of in war. Like we're not in a hot war, right? But there are cold wars happening everywhere. So pacifism during times of war is destructive.
My uncle from the Bronx always told me that we're in World War like 11. I was like, what if World War 3 breaks out? He's like, yo, listen, we're in World War 11. It's just kept from you. I'm like, I got his point actually a little bit. But yeah, I guess I see that. I just think that, I don't know, allowing these systems to just fall into the hands, like these mass control systems to fall into the hands. It just seems like we're flying towards China's system. And there is a little bit of a dialectical game being played. And every book that I read by one of, you know, sort of these technologists or whatever, kind of leans towards that. Like, hey, China's doing this. We have to do it if we're going to survive because their system is capable. They're, essentially, we need to build an AI system that overlooks all of society and monitors everything so we can focus on defeating China.
Well, Doug, do you, so let's just take it like less internal to America and more external, right? China is developing military systems that are obviously very advanced. Do you also think that Palantir shouldn't help the government match those military systems because China's doing it?
I feel like in the game of matching their system, we're going to create their system and we're going to live under that system. That's the fear. In the same way that after World War II, for example, right, we try to export liberal democracy and the rest of the world tried to match our system and they ended up living under systems that are similar, which is why you kind of see countries around the world experiencing what feels like very similar problems. Do you know? Because they built their system based on our system and they didn't cure like the problems within our system. So I just feel what I'm trying to say is that yes, I'm not saying that Palantir shouldn't exist. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that without curing the underlying problems, which is really lobbying or the ability to lobby and, you know, garner votes based off of just how much money you spend, we're going to end up into a system of total control. That's what I'm saying. That I understand the dire need in the game that's being played. I just think that like it's like you're not playing our own game anymore. We're playing another country's game because the system looks appetizing.
I think that it's possible you've been sort of led on by the media a little bit too much.
That's a possibility too.
In terms of a possibility. No, let me finish. In terms of Palantir being this like evil surveillance, like a lot of what they do is like with Louisiana thing, these government bureaucracies. And by the way, I'm sure Karp would like advocate to fixing the root problems, of course, but he can't fix everything, right? So he's focused on on like just supplying good software to governments and companies who don't have good software. But on the Louisiana side, it's, and he made this example with the US military too, is you have all these silos of data, right? Every government department is so bureaucratic with so many people that you have data all over the place, and A, they don't connect to each other, and B, even if they did connect to each other, they would be bad at making inferences, right? And like saying, okay, this data from here combined with that data from there will lead us to this terrorist, right? Governments can't build software like that. They're just incapable. Carp gave us the example of like the U.S. Army tried for a decade, spent, I think, $10 billion and couldn't come up with anything, right? So Palantir exists for that reason. That was their first product, and that's their most successful product, is just like combining data sets from siloed systems and then making inferences using AI, right? It's not, I think the surveillance state, like surveillance, you know, powers of Palantir are a little bit overblown. I'm sure they do some of that, but it's like, A, the government is probably doing that on their own outside of Palantir anyways, which like Snowden showed they are. Right. And I don't think, yeah, but it is a good question of like the technological republic title though. Like I also was thinking about that and like wasn't really sure. Like I wish he like summed up better what he means by the technological republic.
Right. I felt like that was like missing. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Like, yeah, I mean, he talks a lot about the engineering mindset, which, you know, we learned in the last book around like what an engineering society looks like, right, in China.
Right. That was amazing. They lined up.
Yeah. And like, yeah, he talks about that a lot. I think he talks about just like really just being as creative and as possible and also just not having the inhibitions of like being canceled all the time, right? Like he talked a lot about that through the book, that we're so guarded now, right? And we're so like scared of what someone is going to say about it. Like if we have a thought that just doesn't align with like the mainstream opinion, like what's going to happen with us, and how our culture has totally devolved in that way to just like not being a free thinking and independent culture. But I don't really, yeah. I mean, Kyle, I guess, do you have any ideas on like what the title meant?
I think we're supposed to infer that there's a possible republic that the US can reach if we are okay with and accept the fact that great minds don't just work in the private space, they also work in the public space. And the public space is when you work with the government. Now, you could be a private company working with the public, the government. But like, we can't avoid working with the government. Bringing up like the idea of the philosopher king from Plato's Republic, our politicians, and maybe this is because we've built so many individualistic apps, and that's where all of our attention is. Our politicians, there was a point in the book that was made of, we want to know them personally. And it's not really important to know them personally if they make good decisions on behalf of the country. That doesn't mean that if I find out about something a politician does, I'm going to like them. Maybe I won't like them. But if they have good policies and those policies further our culture, then I want that to be a politician in office, because I don't need to know a personal life of the CEO of my company. I don't need to know the personal life of the developer who built the app that's helping me track my baby's like feeding time and, you know, their diaper. Like, it's not important. Give me the tool that's helpful to me. Give me the policy that's going to further us. And that's what I want to see. And so philosopher kings, and maybe I'm misremembering it, but like politicians have become a celebritydom where it's more important to like be popular than it is to have a good policy. And I think that's a consequence and a symptom of individuality being pushed down our throats. there was a really good quote of that was in the book. Of course, now I'm never going to be able to find it. About like we've spent so much time creating all these things that like entertain us, and the result is that all of our attention gets sucked away, and nobody's as productive as they could potentially be. We've never been so smart as a society, and yet we're making the dumbest decisions because we're focused on dumb things.
Like what?
Why do I want to open up a social media app at night instead of reading a book? Today.
But no one's making you do that, Kyle. Today.
Nobody's making me do it. You're 100% correct. But we have the smartest minds building things that make me want to open it rather than doing something else. And that's something else, we don't know what it could be because everyone's focused on sucking in your attention.
Your problem is the algorithm. You think the algorithms are too powerful.
They are too powerful. I just saw like 9 people crossing the street today with like cars flying across the road looking down at their phone. They're way too powerful. Dude, if they are so distracting and so addicting that when you're crossing the street, where you could get, I mean, when you're little, like the first thing they teach you is look when you cross the street.
Yeah.
They literally have people like that, like a grown man. I've done it. I actually was the guy. But like I'm crossing the street like this.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Palantir shouldn't exist. I'm not saying that this guy is pure evil and Peter Thiel's pure evil. I'm not sure any of those things are true at all. But I do feel my main fear is, one, we're essentially giving, like, let's say people from the private sector just start jumping in. Let's say basically everyone at Twitter that Elon Musk fired, that like a couple people who were actually start applying for government jobs, and they have access to very powerful technologies, and their ideological beliefs start filtering into the use of these technologies. That's the problem he hasn't solved. And that's the one that I feel like the founding fathers were thinking of, but they didn't understand what was coming. They didn't understand the technological system. They were thinking like, how do we stop like a complete abuse of the citizens if an absolute idiot gets into power, which is why everything seems so chaotic and states are running things and counties are, and it's annoying. Like I deal with it in real estate. It is annoying, but I just think that those problems are like almost existential. And I do agree with him that there do need to be brighter people in the public sphere, like sector. And he makes a good point that, you know, the head of the Federal Reserve gets paid like $129,000 a year or something, but there is a danger anyway. That's all I'm saying.
For sure. And the danger, I think, for that is the result of those employees who worked at Twitter and left when Elon Musk bought it. They left because they didn't believe in the culture, and they didn't believe in the culture likely because they don't agree with the stories of that culture. But to admit that there is an existence of a culture doesn't mean that that culture is superior. So when we're looking at American culture is about innovation. It's about cowboys. It's about exploring the Western Front. It's about like, if you want to get nuanced, it's about Miami, like bathing in the sun, California, going to surf. Like we have a culture. And when you say that American culture, or when you believe that American culture isn't worthwhile or valuable, and thus we need to change the culture, you dismiss and ignore the stories that built the culture that were valuable. Mm. And when you don't have a unified culture, you go into materialism because you need something to fill the void that brought the social cohesion. So yeah, there is a huge problem, Doug, with a lot of people who work in the private sector who would go into the public sector and then all of a sudden apply their ideology rather than recognizing that they are part of a society, have benefited from the society, and thus should help the society grow rather than trying to flip a 180 because they don't agree with their boss, and so they're going to go off the rails and put some weird code into an AI that the government's about to implant inside of all of our phones or something, right? Like, I don't want there to be an AI that the government has in our phones, but we need to recognize we're part of the United States, so we should help the United States or get the fuck out. I mean, maybe that's just my military side coming out, but like, I don't like everything the government does, but I for sure would not have wanted to grow up anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Very well said, Kyle. I think that's a big part of the book too, right? Is like not shying away from our national identity and what like really has made this country as good as it is. And you see, like, you just see that so much now of like politicians or thought leaders, whatever, like advocating for this like one world, like multiculturalism kind of society. And I think you just are seeing that break down in so many places where they're trying it, especially like Western Europe. And like, you know, like I hate to say, like, you know, like I guess ideally we'd all, you know, live together happily, but like there is something to say, like different cultures just have value different things, right? And have different morals and whatever, and like you have to acknowledge that, and right, and you shouldn't be canceled as a, in society for saying those beliefs, right? Which is like the kind of the state of the world we're in now. You can't really go public, like too public with like our culture is different than a culture in Africa, right? It was like the example with the Western African mask versus like something in the, on the Apollo ship, and how those lead to different cultures, like how some guy, some professor or something said the, you know, Apollo ship was much more impressive than the Western African, and he got canceled for that. I forget the exact story, but
that's legendary.
Yeah. And so
that guy probably is still right now sitting on his couch like, but I was right.
Yeah. And
the Apollo ship is equal to the West African mask. I just need to, that needs to be exclaimed. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. But Kyle, yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly, which is like, you know, if you don't like love this country, and if you don't adhere to its values, and like maybe you should go somewhere else, right? Like,
yeah, the values, by the way, too, they're not bad. All values for America are like really good values. Where you see, in my view, a breakdown of American values is when somebody goes, I'm an American. Everyone goes, okay, you're American. And then they go, and now follow this rule, right? When you impede upon a person's sovereign rights, that's when you start to go, well, I don't want to follow your rule. Just let me be me. And if we can all do that, then we can all live together and you can have a multicultural society. I saw something online recently, which was like, it was a joke, and it was poking fun at the idea of a multicultural society, which is Europe drew up lines on Africa, and then you had a lot of civil wars inside of those countries because there were different tribes, and those different tribes had different cultures. And the joke was like, oh, so you're saying that multiple cultures inside of one society leads to war? What a crazy thought. And it's partly because who's in power? What are they trying to place as rules upon the other people? And if we focus on the individual rights, I think that we would be okay. But it's difficult to say that and expect it to then happen as application, right? Because people aren't going to be, when they get into power, so nice. No, I know what's best. Follow my lead. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't have like a response. I just sort of stared at you. Sorry, because Scott and I were like,
these are. I did enjoy this book, Scott. Great,
me too.
Great
I really choice. Liked it. I really liked it.
I think that there's probably more we could dive into, but I don't know if you guys want to or if you have any other topics. we kind of like on each point touched on a lot.
I think we did touch on a lot of the major themes. I'm just looking at my notes, seeing if I see anything else worth speaking about. Yeah, I think we touched on most of the major themes. I think there's just a lot of interesting like threads we can pull, but yeah, I don't know how deep we want to go.
AI, just as the last point, I loved this this part of the book where they said that like AI has large language models, LLMs have like 100 trillion parameters. And if you take that and you try to equate it to a human brain has like near 1 quadrillion parameters. So we're 10xing LLMs right now with our brain. If you were to equate the connection of our synapses to each other, AI sentience is something that is such a FUD topic right now of like, don't do it. You know, it's going to take over the world. And I honestly don't know if it's something we need to worry about. Like AIs right now are super helpful. Mm-hmm. Let's get them in as many things as possible. Let's, you know, build them correctly. I'm building one right now for my company in the sense of like, I'm feeding it information to read and then help clients. It saves me so much time. Like, mm-hmm. Let's try and implant that everywhere because it creates a new job. Like somebody's got to do this job that I'm doing. So could do that for another company if you practice a little bit. I didn't study computer science. I don't have the background for it. I just started playing with it.
Yeah. I don't know how to build a car either, but I drive one. Yeah, I thought this was a great book. Honestly, great choice, Scott, yet again. You haven't led us wrong. And we've kind of been on a similar, you know, we've been on a similar journey for both of the books I've enjoyed. I do think that feudalism can work. It did work for for how long did feudalism last? I do think we're on a rocket ship towards that. The more that I think about it,
Jesus,
I don't know if there's any way out.
For I the do. Next,
the... I just wanted, I needed said so that they can put me into the system and get rid of me quick before I have to live under it.
For the next book, I wanted to read a sci-fi book, but I'm having a little bit of trouble.
What about selecting? What Scott chose?
I didn't, when I read the synopsis of it, I didn't love it.
Which one?
It's a classic. That's iRobot, I think.
Which one?
Why Androids Dream of Electric Sleep.
Yeah. What about the other one, Clara and the Sun?
I'm going to have to look again.
All right, Kyle, I guess you choose.
I have a long list of books that I've bought in the last few months that I could supply you with and
sci-fi ones.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see a list.
You guys want to read this?
Fuck no.
Come on. Phenomenology of Spirit.
Oh God.
Bagel.
Have you guys read? This is like pretty classic at this point. But have you guys read the Andy Weir book? What's it called? Hail Mary. Project Hail Mary.
No.
We should read that.
What about the CIA? But what's the one about the Manson murders? Did you guys read that?
No. Kyle,
wait, Project Hail Mary is being turned into a show?
Yeah. Yeah, a movie, I think.
Oh. There was one that I came across. Would you guys want to read Murderbot? Murderbot is going to be a new TV show, I think, on Amazon.
Looks like it already is a TV show on Apple.
Well, on Apple, excuse me. Would you want to read that? Speaking of
I just found. I literally opened the first thing it said is Murderbot has to be one of the worst sci-fi books I've ever read.
All right, so not that. Jesus.
The only thing I don't like about it is like there's 5 books to the series, and I guess you don't have to read them all, but
Dude, let's read a classic.
Wait, Kyle, you didn't want to read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? It's based off Blade Runner.
Let me look at it again.
Hold on. I have
have you guys read Neuromancer?
What about The Demolished Man?
What's that?
Yeah, this is not iRobot. iRobot was Isaac.
That was Asimov. That's right.
All right, Demolished let's do this Man one.
Is a science fiction novel by American writer Alfred Bester, which won the Hugo Award in 1953. An inverted detective story. The novel was first serialized in three parts. Nope, maybe not.
Doug, have you read any Ian Banks?
No.
He's a big sci-fi writer. Elon has been like advocating to read him. Apparently he has the most like positive and realistic like view of the future when it comes to sci-fi. Because most,
what was the name of the author?
Ian Banks. It's IAIN.
Mm-hmm.
Why does parents do that to him? Why didn't you just spell it? Why'd you add the extra I?
I also really think that Claire and the Sun would be a fun read because it's very AI heavy. I think it has themes of like companionship with AI, and I just think it's very, very timely, and I've heard a lot of good things about it.
My wife has replaced me with ChatGPT, by the way, for advice.
Oh jeez.
I don't know if anyone else is going through the same thing.
I think it's going to be a huge AI companionship. I think is just going to get bigger and bigger. They're going to be more emotional in the future. They're going to be more personalized to us. They're going to be more emotional themselves. Right. They're going to have more empathy in their voice and everything. And then eventually we'll start to see them in physical form factors too, with like little robots and Optimus and things like that.
It'll be fun.
Let me read a little bit on.
I'm cool Android for stream whatever. You guys of pick. Electric Sheep. You know, if I pick, I'm going to pick Tragedy and Hope.
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep and Clara in the Sun? I'll look at both of them again.
Okay.
Oh, I do. I have The Demolished Man here. You guys want to read it?
We should read individually. I'm going to read Project Hail Mary, but I'm not sure actually if that's the best book for. I don't know how like philosophical it is, and like I think one of the things that is really good for this book club is to like make sure we can have a little bit deeper discussions, right?
Yeah.
Around like what we learned and have you read that, Doug?
No.
I agree, Scott.
No. By the way, do either of you guys currently play video games?
Sometimes no. I'm addicted to Shogun Total War, but I really got to go. I have to go to a food opening. I have to go to my friend's.
All right.
He's building out a restaurant.
Doug, how about you save us some time a little bit next time?
What do you mean?
Just, you know, like carve a little extra time into your day for us.
Nah,
bro, I've had a hell day. A wild day. I'm dealing with a lot.
Scott, what were you about to ask?
I don't even
want
to go to this thing.
I just got a PS5 last week, and I've been getting into it. I'm playing Cyberpunk right now.
Okay.
It's funny because I like have not played video games in 15 years, and like getting back into it with like a PS5, just like super high quality graphics and like amazing games, like such good storytelling. I'm like just like mind blown every time I play it.
What game are you playing?
Cyberpunk.
I heard it's really good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You should play the God of War games.
Yeah, there's so many on my list. There's so many.
Red Dead Redemption.
There's so many.
I'm saving all the games for when we're in a retirement home and we can't move, and then I'll just whip out my video games and play them until I die.
Dude, before I go to a retirement home, I'm taking a wheelchair off of a cliff. I'm just gonna give my daughter one look and just say goodbye. Just wheel myself.
Jesus.
That's how I'm going out.
Wait, Doug, you play Shogun?
Shogun Total War 2.
I'm going to stop the recording. I'm going to stop the recording. Thank you for listening to How You Level Up. If you're enjoying the show, subscribe and give a 5-star rating. There are new episodes each month asking questions about timeless communication lessons. Language is a medium for sharing, and the knowledge unpacked here can be applied to anyone, anywhere, facing any challenge. If there's a question or topic you'd like me to dive into next, send a note to any of my connected social media accounts. This is all about how you level up.